Chapter 7
Chupas. The Gormans obviously witnessed some unidentified flying objects over their property and felt threatened by them. Was their fear justified? We think it was an appropriate reaction, especially given the fact the rectangular objects they had seen had previously been linked to human injuries and death. In Brazil, these box-shaped craft that are said to make a sound like a refrigerator are known as chupas. Dr. Jacques Vallée, a scientist who has carefully and intensively investigated the UFO phenomenon for more than 4 decades, went to South America in the 1980s to investigate the chupa wave in Brazil and the numerous reports of UFO close encounters that have resulted in the death or injury of witnesses. The results of his extensive field investigations are detailed in his book, Confrontations: A Scientist's Search for Alien Contact. For example, in Parnarama, in central Brazil, Vallée reports that at least 5 people had died following close encounters with what were described as box-like UFOs equipped with powerful light beams. Many of the victims were hunters who, following the local tradition, had climbed into jungle trees at night to wait for passing animals that they could spotlight and shoot. According to researcher Simon Harvey Wilson, in an ironic twist, the hunters had themselves been hunted by UFO craft, which injured or killed them using light beams of their own. Harvey Wilson continues, as Vallée reports, these chupas, UFOs, are said to make a humming sound like a refrigerator or a transformer, and this sound does not change when the object accelerates. The object does not seem large enough to contain a human pilot. In one case, a victim called Dionisio General was atop a hill when an object hovered above him and shot a beam in his direction. It was described as a big ray of fire. The witness, José dos Santos, testified that Dionisio seemed to receive a shock and came rolling down the hill. For the following 3 days, he was insane with terror. Then he died. Witnesses described the light beams as being blinding, like electrical arcs with pulsating colors inside and smelling unpleasant, which Vallée suspects may be ozone. By November 1977, according to Vallée, the physician in charge of the health unit on Colares Island, Dr. Velage Cicim Carvalho de Oliveira, had seen no fewer than 35 patients claiming injuries related to the chupas. All of them had suffered lesions to the face or the thoracic area. These lesions, which resembled radiation injuries, began with intense reddening of the skin in the affected area. Later, the hair would fall out and the skin would turn black. There was no pain, only a slight warmth. One also noticed small puncture marks in the skin. The victims were men and women of varying ages, without any pattern. Vallée published a more comprehensive list of symptoms, drawn up by Dr. Corvalho. A feeling of weakness. Some could hardly walk. Dizziness and headaches. Local losses of sensitivity, numbness and trembling. Pallid complexion. Low arterial pressure. Anemia with low hemoglobin levels. Blackened skin where the light had hit, with several red-purple circles, hot and painful, 2 to 3 centimeters in diameter. 2 puncture marks inside the red circles, resembling mosquito bites, hard to the touch. Hair in the blackened area fell out and did not rejuvenate, as if follicles had been destroyed. No nausea or diarrhea. In describing their experiences with these light beams, most victims claimed, according to Vallée, that they were immediately immobilized, as if a heavy weight pushed against their chest. The beam was about 7 or 8 centimeters in diameter and white in color. It never hunted for them, but hit them suddenly. When they tried to scream, no sound would come out, but their eyes remained open. The beam felt hot, almost as hot as a cigarette burn. Barely tolerable. After a few minutes, the column of light would slowly retract and disappear. Apart from those who had been killed by these beams, most people's symptoms usually disappeared after 7 days. After asking various forensic pathologists to review his findings, Vallée surmised that what UFO witnesses describe as light may, in fact, be a complex combination of ionizing and non-ionizing radiation. Many of the injuries described in Brazil, however, are consistent with the effects of high-power pulsed microwaves. Subsequently, he pointed out that pulsed microwaves may, interfere with the central nervous system. Such a beam could cause the dizziness, headaches, paralysis, pricklings, and numbness reported to us by so many witnesses. Vallée tackled the issue of whether these Brazilian UFOs are deliberately trying to kill people or not. If they are, he considers that they are fairly inefficient. After all, someone in a helicopter with a high-powered rifle and night scope could probably do a better job. He does, however, point out that a radiation beam that was designed merely to stun people at one range might be lethal at another range. Journalist Bob Pratt also investigated the injuries that occurred during the Brazilian UFO wave and wrote a book about it called UFO Danger Zone, Terror and Death in Brazil. Like Vallée, Pratt's investigations of the Brazil wave turned up several deaths and injuries from UFOs. In other words, the New Age bromides that UFOs were actually friendly space brothers intent on the spiritual enlightenment of the human race were not borne out by the experiences of the locals along the northern coast of Brazil. The issue of injuries from UFOs also cropped up in North America during the last week of 1980. On the evening of December 29th, according to accounts by researcher John Schussler and written accounts by the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, NICAP, Betty Cash, Vicky Landrum, and Colby Landrum had visited several small towns in the Piney Woods area of East Texas looking for a bingo game but found that bingo throughout the area had been canceled for Christmas. Instead, they decided to have a meal at a restaurant in New Caney. Betty Cash was then a 51-year-old businesswoman who owned a restaurant and a grocery store. Vicky Landrum, 57, worked for Betty in the restaurant. Colby Landrum, Vicky's grandson, was 7. According to the NICAP report, after leaving the restaurant between 8:20 and 8:30 p.m., Betty drove along Highway FM 1485, a road usually used only by people who live in the area because it is so isolated. Although the location is only about 30 miles from Houston, it is thinly populated and is covered by oak and pine trees, swamps, and lakes. At about 9 o'clock, Colby noticed a bright lighted object above the treetops some distance away. He pointed it out to the others. As they drove on, it appeared to get larger and larger. They realized that the object was approaching the road, but they hoped to get by it in time and leave it behind. But before they could do so, the object straddled the road and blocked their way. The object, many times larger than the car, remained hovering at treetop level and sent down an occasional large cone of fire. In between these blasts, it would descend until it was no more than about 25 feet off the surface of the road. Vicky described it as like a diamond of fire. When Betty eventually brought the car to a standstill, the object was only 60 yards away. It looked as if it was made of dull aluminum and glowed so brightly that it lit up the surrounding trees. The four points of the diamond were blunt rather than sharp, and blue spots or lights ringed its center. Had it not come to rest over the road, the cone of fire from its lowest point would have set the forest on fire. The object also emitted an intermittent bleeping sound. The two women got the impression that maybe the giant object was having some kind of engine trouble. The three of them got out of the car to take a better look at the object. Vicky stood by the open door on the right-hand side of the car with her left hand resting on the car roof. Vicky is a Christian who does not believe in UFOs or extraterrestrial life, and when she saw the bright object, she thought the end of the world had come. Because she expected to see Jesus come out of the light, she stared at it intently. Colby begged his grandmother to get back in the car. After about 3 minutes, she did so and told him not to be afraid because, when that big man comes out of the burning cloud, it will be Jesus. As Vicky held Colby, she screamed at Betty to get back in the car with them, but Betty was so fascinated by the object that she walked around to the front of the car and stood there, gazing at it, bathed in the bright light, the heat from it burning her skin. Eventually, as the thing began to move up and away, she moved back to the car door. When she went to open the door, she found the handle so painfully hot that she had to use her leather jacket to protect her hands and get back in the car. As the three of them watched the departing object, a large number of helicopters appeared overhead. They seemed to rush in from all directions, Betty recalled later. It seemed like they were trying to encircle the thing. Within a few seconds, the flying diamond had disappeared behind the trees lining the road. It was then that they realized how hot the interior of the car had become. They switched off the heater and put on the air conditioner instead. When the effects of the bright light had worn off, Betty drove off down the darkened highway. After driving at 60 miles an hour for 5 minutes, The object was clearly visible some distance ahead and looked like a bright cylinder of light. From that distance, it was still lighting up the surrounding area and illuminating the helicopters. Many of them were identified as the large double-rotor CH-47 Chinooks. The others were very fast single-rotor types and appeared to be Bell Hueys, but were never properly identified. As soon as the Flying Diamond and helicopters were a safe distance ahead, Betty drove on. When she reached an intersection, she turned away from the flight path of the object and toward Dayton, where the three of them lived. She dropped Vicky and Colby off at their home at about 9:50 and went home by herself. A friend and her children were waiting up for Betty, but by this time she was feeling too ill to tell them about what had happened. Over the next few hours, Betty's skin turned red as if badly sunburned. Her neck swelled and blisters erupted and broke on her face, scalp, and eyelids. She started to vomit and continued to do so throughout the night. By morning, she was almost in a coma. Sometime between midnight and 2 a.m., Vicky and Colby began to suffer similar symptoms, although less severe. At first, they suffered a sunburn-like condition, and then diarrhea and vomiting. The following morning, Betty was moved to Vicky's house, and all three were cared for there. Betty's condition continued to deteriorate, and 3 days later, she was taken to the hospital. The burns and swelling had so radically altered Betty's appearance that friends who came to visit her in hospital did not recognize her. Her hair began to fall out, and her eyes became so swollen that she was unable to see for a week. Doctors examined all three of them intensively and determined that their condition suggested that they had been exposed to radiation, possibly ionizing UV or IR. The injuries were not entirely consistent with either ionizing radiation or UVIR injuries only. Some also suspected that microwave radiation may have literally cooked Betty Cash. Betty died of cancer in 1998, possibly as a result of the radiation she received. Regardless of whether the object they encountered was a secret government project or something else, the injuries they received were real. The Gormans had every reason to be scared.